Hello, everybody, and welcome to Integrated Rhythm. We're back. We know it's been a few months. We apologize. Life stuff, the pandemic, you know how it goes. But we do have a lot of episodes lined up, so don't worry. They do exist. And this is one of them. This is Stephanie Schilling. Stephanie Schilling is a Balboa dancer, Lindy Hop dancer in the Cleveland area. And you might know her if you listen to our number 3 episode, Zen AF. And so this is her second time back on the show. We're so excited to have her. You don't have to go back and listen to that episode to enjoy this one. But if you enjoy this one, there's more by just going back and listening to that one. By the way, this interview was recorded a bit ago, and we still think it's a great conversation, very pertinent. So we still think it's perfectly worthy of your time and attention. However, if you go up to Stephanie and you're like, hey, I really like that thing that you said in the Integrated Rhythm episode recently, she might be like, oh, sorry, that was so long ago, I don't even remember. And that could be a thing. So, just so you know. All right, here we go.
Integrated Rhythm with Gisomo and Bobby.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Integrated Rhythm, two swing dancing besties. That's Gisomo Salamani and myself, Bobby White, navigating race and the black experience in jazz dances and other Afrocentric social dancing. In this episode, we have yet another awesome conversation with our great friend, Stephanie A.K. Schilling. And you might remember her from our number 3 episode, Zen AF, which you should go back and listen to at some point. You don't have to go back and listen to it before you listen to this one. This one is action-packed material. And at the end, she mentions, or we talk a little bit about Zen AF, that episode. And so if you don't quite understand what's going on there, go back, check it out. If you like this episode, go back, check that one out. If you don't like this episode, go back and check that one out. It's a little bit different. But we love having Stephanie on the show, and we're really excited about it. By the way, thank you so much for your patience over these last few weeks as we handle some life situations, which has kept us from being able to do some episodes. Those life situations are going to continue to happen over the next few months. That can't be helped. And we really appreciate all the patience that you've been showing us. By the way, if you don't know who Stephanie A.K. Schilling is, today's guest, she is a badass in cybersecurity, and she teaches swing dancing and works with diversity and inclusion in all of her realms. And she has some very personal experiences that she wants to talk about here in the swing scene, and that's what we're going to get into today. And we hope you love it. We really, really appreciated her coming and being a part of this thing and being so open and honest in giving her feedback. So, hope you enjoy it. Stephanie A.K. Schilling!
Integrated Rhythm with Gisomo and Bobby.
That's a good place to start. Gisomo, when you said that, you made me think of a Juneteenth celebration that I went to this year. And any of the hesitancies and pauses is because a lot of the Black Americans and African Americans that I've talked to have very mixed feelings on Juneteenth's new status as a national recognized holiday, where it feels once again like this weird thing of, well, look at what we're doing, and trying to convince the country that in some manners that we live in like a post-racial society, and then without actually addressing the violence and enduring harm that we do to, you know, some of our individuals and vulnerable communities. But the interesting part about this Juneteenth party, so for anyone listening, I am biracial. My mother is a lovely white German. I'm going to say white German. She's a lovely white German born in Berlin. And my father is a black New Yorker, born and raised. And this Juneteenth party that I went to at my old German school teacher's house. They have this beautiful house on the beach. We drove out there, hung out, and I was surrounded by a bunch of Germans. My sister and I were the only people of color. And it did my heart well. One of the things that I often see when I talk to Europeans, including a lot of Europeans in swing dancing, is the denial of systemic oppression in their countries. And not only have I studied some of it, but I also have firsthand experience with it. And it's just a bold-faced lie. We can go down different countries in Europe and say who they oppress based upon their ethnicity. Why aren't Turkish and Turkish Germans and these kids and these families that are there considered to be real Germans? That's a problem. Why do we look at the Roma? It's not a good word. But for anyone who does not know what Roma is, it is, I feel like, a more well-known but still pejorative term, unfortunately, is gypsy. When we look at how the gypsies and the Roma communities and are treated across Europe. And we're also even talking about Muslims and things. And so when I'm like, when you look at racism and we look at what the swing scene is trying to deal with, you might not know all of the itty bitty nuances of the racism in the United States, but you know racism, and racism still exists. And why don't we try to sit with that? Because if we can admit that, then we can start asking the question, well, what can we do to make this world a more just place? And this was one of my first times where I was surrounded by a bunch of Germans that were like, well, first of all, we are celebrating Juneteenth. It was German Americans. Some of the Germans were like, you know, the older generation, my mother's age. Some of the Germans were like my age, who are over here doing work studies and things like that, or who are over here for like a long-term work project. And it was very emotionally soothing to be in a room full of Germans that are like, racism is real. This shit happens in Germany. This shit happens all over the world. We didn't know about Juneteenth, so that was also interesting talking about that and why it is a celebration, and not dismissing or belittling or denying my existence, which I feel like often happens.
I think this conversation is super timely, also considering everything that's been happening in the UK with the football team. We've been seeing you've these footballers who are from the UK, but many of their family members or many of them have migrated from other places, and we've seen like racist outlashing and terrible racist events happening with brutalization of these different players. Yeah. And so on, and it's such a reflection of the importance of all of us thinking about racism and thinking it's not just a US problem, or thinking like, oh, racism is a global issue because of the way that we look at things, because of the impact of colonization, but it's the biggest in the US. It's the worst in the US. It's like, no, it's destructive everywhere. And we have a common experience. The entire world has a common experience, and that is the experience of colonization. And we all have absorbed ideas about who is powerful and who should be in power. And we've done this passively. It's not anybody's fault, but it's present, and we need to recognize it, or else what you said, your lifetime of experiences of being rendered invisible or cast aside or ignored are reflective of people not doing work and not acknowledging that you can be many different things and wanting to decide for you who you should be. So it's so wonderful that you had that experience at that Juneteenth party. And so thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, you remind me of an internet thing that's floating around, and it's talking about a movie theater where if you let's say that there's a movie theater and the owner hated people in wheelchairs. So they built their movie theater without any wheelchair accessibility. And then they go on, who knows how many years later, and sell it to you. And you're fine with people with wheelchairs. You're like, no, I want everyone to come here, whatever else. But if you don't fix the infrastructure, you're still going to be excluding individuals. Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to look at how these systems in place are not our fault, but the question is, what are we going to do about it and how we all have that responsibility? Because I truly think it makes the world and our lives better. GZOPZ, could you imagine a world where like everyone was actually free to be themselves and to be able to express themselves and to live happy, healthy lives? And like how? I literally can't, because I feel like that the human spirit is so creative that I like don't even know. I don't even know. It's like Meet the Robinsons times 1,000.
Yeah.
The Disney movie, not the whatever.
Yeah. You, in your work, in your professional life, you have worked with different people and encouraged them to consider diversifying their different organizations, institutions, et cetera. You've had great platforms that have reached multinational corporations and people locally, regionally, nationally, globally. And in these conversations, in these presentations, one of the things that you have talked about is the reason why people should diversify their workforces. And so do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because you were saying, yes, how wonderful it would be for everybody to be able to live freely, but then there's also financial implications, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have the research. We know that diverse organizations, and right now, I would like to throw out, when I have a feeling that when we are all on this call talking about diversity, we're not just talking about ethnic diversity, right? We are talking about race, ethnicity. Wow.
It's that word can be a doozy. It's all good.
religious, sexual and gender expression, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, national, like there's so much that we are encompassing, differing abilities and the like, right? Like we're not just talking about one particular thing here, but we have the research to show that when you have a more diverse team, you make better decisions. For corporations, you tend to make better products and you make more money. I'm like, if you can't get behind it because it's the right thing to do, get behind it because it helps your pocketbook. And then also, this is really interesting. I went to an FBI diversity recruitment event, and they flat out said that one of the biggest dangers to the United States is the homogeneity of the organization, where how can they protect the American people and the Constitution, which is their duty, when they don't look like the American people and the Constitution, and that it affects the work that they need to do. And being a part of cybersecurity, I'm also in critical infrastructure, and there's just a massive gap. Like, there's not enough people in cybersecurity. If you're looking at going into the field, let me know, because I would love to do what I can do to help you, because we desperately need more people. And when we are tying our hands and forcing ourselves to recruit from the same demographics and the same groups of people, we're missing everybody else. And if we are desperate for people, and if we are desperate for talent, and we are desperate for individuals to get into this field so we can literally keep our organizations and our communities safer, right? I'm talking about organized crime being able to take down hospital systems for a month, and people not being, and doctors not being able to access patient files, our power grids going down, nation states going under. And we're just, I actually truly believe that diversity, inclusion, equity, and justice is a huge part and should continue to be a huge part of the pathway forward to better defend our world.
Yeah. Yeah. And those conversations that you're having within cybersecurity, those conversations that are being had that you were describing associated with like national security issues, so on. We can extrapolate that out and think about any space that is predominated by the majority perspective. And so, in my profession, we're having similar conversations as well. And I know that I have friends who are in conservation. A good friend, Anna Young, is doing some really great things with collaboration. And so in conservation and environmentalism and all these different spaces that are kind of dominated by a majority voice, we like everything that you said stands. And so there's one more space that's kind of obvious that we haven't mentioned.
I don't know.
Swing dancing. What? Everything that you said in terms of safety, in terms of moving us forward, in terms of people being included and doing things in an interesting way, like all of that comes out of representation and diversity and having people be able to exist in the full spectrum of who they are, in the full spectrum of their humanity. And so
not only exist, but thrive. Yeah. It takes so much effort for anyone who is part of a vulnerable population to be in a community where they are not dominant. And it's not necessarily because of the makeup, but it's because of the entrenched, often microaggressions that they have.
Rennie doesn't like oppression
either.
We stop
on it. He's like, no to microaggressions. Yes. No to microaggressions. Rennie, it's often of the right. It's death by a thousand paper cuts.
Yeah.
Where you are constantly proving that you and trying to find breathing space to be there. Hi, yeah. I know.
Yeah, and not only are there external factors, but there are internal factors as well. And so many of our great authors, thinking about W.E.B. Du Bois, thinking about James Baldwin, thinking about Maya Angelou, like there's something to be said about the internal oppressor as well. And so when we think about safety for people who are from groups that have been marginalized and have experienced historical oppression, there's also an internal component that we're battling. And so sometimes we're not even safe to ourselves for that reason as well. So,
oh yeah. And one of my poli-sci courses, we were going through American history and looking at, so one of the things I think is really interesting about the United States is that we're like, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X is bad. And I'm and I think it's because we've been able to whitewash Dr. King more easily, but we were watching something and it was historical footage of individuals who had just heard Malcolm X speak for the first time. And I went to Miami University. It's a primary white institution. And I was the only Black woman in the class. And there's a woman on film and she was talking about how she had never heard the words Black is beautiful before. Mm. And like, and I can have really big hair, and I did that day. And I realized I never felt that Black was beautiful before. And this is like, you know, this is in my early 20s. I just literally put my hair down and started crying in class because it just, you internalize this shit because you're told it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing is that Martin Luther King Jr., any notable Black activist said the things that are uncomfortable. Everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone said the things that were uncomfortable, including MLK Jr. But we like to pick some quotes and leave out a whole lot of books.
Yeah. People get upset with me when I am when they're talking about protesting and stopping things, whatever else. I'm like, have you read any Dr. King's works? Because he's literally saying the reason why their methods worked is because they made the majority community's lives so uncomfortable and so disruptive that they were willing to come to the table to bargain.
Yeah.
By the way, if our audience out there, if you haven't read the autobiography of Malcolm X, I can't recommend it enough. That's one of those books that I think is kind of like, that should be with your, not, you know, we all get like American citizenship. If you're born here, you just get American citizenship anyway. But, you know, when you turn a certain age, like they should just start handing you books and being like, if you want to renew that thing, you should read this one or that one. And obviously that would be, that's, anyway, Malcolm X.
You just made me think, are we going to start launching into a conversation about the banning of critical race theory across the United States and how people are leaving their jobs because they think it's obviously ridiculous also the conflation that's happening. That's horrible. That's happening.
And you know, so I grew up in Atlanta, and in Atlanta, you got your Martin Luther King Boulevard, big and beautiful, right? And then you go to other cities, and they usually have their Martin Luther King Boulevard. And then when I go to Harlem, what I see is Malcolm X Boulevard. For the first time, I'm like, oh, wait, that's the first Malcolm X Boulevard I've seen. That's the first Malcolm X proudly put on a street sign. And like, so yeah, so Malcolm X spent a lot of time in Harlem, and you can read all about it in his autobiography. And, but you know, what you said makes this resonates with me so much about how, when it got time to like raise one of those civil rights leaders, notably higher than the other one, then I think that mainstream white America was like, oh, well, let's go with Dr. King, who was a preacher and said some nonviolent.
And here's
things.
The kicker. Dr. King and Malcolm both knew it. They both knew how much nonsense it is. There's recordings and there's pages of them talking to it and about each other and about why the position of prominence was different.
Yeah. So listeners, check out some, not only read the other side of Martin Luther King than what people put you in their memes, read the other stuff. Also read Malcolm X stuff, because you'd be surprised at how, you might be surprised at how amazing and thought provoking and like how great it is.
Yeah. A thing that kind of struck me last year with the global civil rights movement that happened was I saw a number of people saying on Facebook and in real life, like, why are people acting like it's the 60s? And I mean, this group is inclusive of Black folks. And that struck me, that question, why are people acting like it's the 1960s? Because at that point in time, it seemed rather obvious to protest. And I would say at this point in time, it seems rather obvious to protest. it's interesting, our vantage point and points. And then also, I've seen this within my own family, within my own life. Like, I think when there is seemingly not much left of the pie for people that you're taught to survive and you're taught to fight for the little that you can, the little piece of the pie that might be available to you. And so in doing so, if that is not a nuanced understanding, then that becomes, I have reached a level of comfort and I am okay. So why should I consider some greater issues? And the fact of the matter is that we aren't okay. Like, it's more of a facade. And that there are many people who are suffering, even if there's some people who are okay and others are, you know. So it's just been, it's been an interesting, you know, it's been an interesting existence, I have to say.
You saying, why are people acting like it's the 1960s? I also think, and maybe it was Senator John Lewis, or maybe it was someone at his funeral, but I can't remember, where they said, a lot of the battles that we thought that we have won, we are now realizing that we did not.
Yes. That was one of the center points of the John Lewis documentary. And so, and he did say that. He said that before he died. He said, we have fought and won battles, but there are some battles that have been rescinded. Like, when we look at voter, specifically in the US, voter registration, that was a battle that people did some really great work on. And then if you look over the last 20, 30 years, like, like, so yeah, 100%. I know that one of the things that you had expressed to me was wanting to kind of share a little bit about our journey coming up in the swing dance scene, especially at the point that you and I started working together in swing, because you had been around for quite a bit before that. But then, like, obviously, like, you and I both had international adventures and then came back and then ended up coming back into swing dancing in Cleveland and the Cleveland scene around the same
time. When you put it like that, Your journey sounds so much more fun when you say international adventures. Are you sure you're not in marketing?
We both, you know what? I mean, being an immigrant kid who has to like run across two continents for multiple code switching, you learn how to shine some stuff up. Can shine up a turd.
We have our episode title.
It's so funny. But yeah, so we had international adventures. You went to Germany. I was deported. You know, same.
jumping back to 20 minutes ago, because, you know, ADHD, one of the things that I thought of when we were talking about the Europeans is just like, I had someone who I'm very close to and loves me. And we were talking about this nonsense one day. And he was like, it doesn't matter where you were born. Spoiler alert, I was born in Germany. It doesn't matter how good you speak this language. The majority of people here will never consider you German because you're brown. They might think that you're North African. But honestly, even then, they would probably prefer to think that you're British because you're nice and you're pretty and we would like you. And it was just really interesting to have someone who cares about me have an open, honest conversation about this. It's also really funny. Oh, this is one of the things that we talked about during Juneteenth as well. To be in Germany and to hear Germans talk some racist shit because they think that you're brown and you don't know what they're saying, to turn around and to start addressing them in German. And to watch how uncomfortable they get real fast. It's literally when my sister and I are traveling. It's one of the highlights of our day.
I've always wanted to have one of those like movie like moments where like someone, you know, they don't know you speak the language and stuff. Unfortunately, no one's tried to tell me something in Latin yet, which was the only language I took in high school.
That'd be hilarious if you were like behind a gang of people that started talking shit in Latin.
Awesome. I guess maybe I'd have to go to the Vatican. I think maybe some of them speak Latin.
In a mass, maybe. You have to go to mass and then some people will be like, we're in mass.
Start talking shit about me and in Latin, like stupid American. Probably isn't bilingual. I turn around and I'm like, salve, magister. Which, for those of you who've taken Latin, is hello, teacher, which is one of the few things I remember about Latin.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It would be enough. It would be enough to strike terror into their hearts. Yeah.
And then I just look like I understood everything. I'm like,
It's convincing to somehow. Please forgive me. I have the habit of reprimanding people's bad behavior in public. Where if someone, and a lot of times with customer service individuals, where if someone is going off and being rude and a jerk, I have leaned over to someone before and just started speaking in German, knowing that she can understand me, but why blatantly staring down the offender and then watching them change their behavior because they're like, oh, people are watching. They're not approving. I'm like, no, they're not approving of your behavior because you're being mean and abusing someone. Yeah. Keep it together. Put on your big person pants and treat the other person with dignity. Can we try that? No? Okay. Well, thank you. If you hear that, Brenny's just throwing around his bone. He's annoyed with me because I'm not playing with him.
I would say for anyone who wants to watch this, you should, because you get a couple sneak peeks of the puppy if you're a puppy person.
Is it still a puppy if it's like the size of Stephanie?
So I was reading things and they're like, your puppy is starting to look like an adult dog right now. But keep in mind, mentally, they're still very much a puppy and they're going to be that way for the next 6 months.
That
and
I'm reminds like, me of me in my 20s. Like, they're like, Bobby may look like an adult, but bear in mind,
he's still a puppy.
Mentally functioning like a teenager.
Some of the best career advice that I ever got, it was when I was graduating university. Someone's like, do what you want, explore. And here's the thing. You got until you're about 25. The second that someone goes, what was that? You go, you know what? I was young. I was learning. It was dumb. I've learned now. Everyone's going to go, yep, good for you. Fair enough. Also, because our brains are not done developing then. Well, up until then.
Yeah. I brought up colorism because that has been a big part of our journeys, being, like I said, two different femme-presenting humans within the swing scene.
And we'll talk about colorism right after this break. You heard enough, and now it's time for the break.
Hey everybody, this is Bobby White from Integrated Rhythm. We're here to ask you to please consider donating to the podcast. You can do so by going to patreon.com/integratedrhythm. You can do so by Venmoing at Bobby Swungover. And make sure to put a little IR in the note so we make sure it goes to the right people. You can also do so by PayPaling at BobbyWhite3. And once again, putting a little IR in the window there. Doing so will help us keep this podcast going, and we love doing it, and we hope you love it too. If you can't afford to donate at this time because times are rough, we totally understand. We don't want you to put yourselves out. We want you to keep enjoying the podcast for free. However, if you have a little bit of pocket change in your pocket, we would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thanks, and have a great day.
Could we get a live performance of ba 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 ba? We're back.
Do you mean like ba 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 ba? We're back.
Yes. Yes.
Bobby, I swear you only like it because you don't live with it. If you live with it, you'd be like, please, for the love of God, I need you to stop. Because I'm constantly singing to myself or just adding sound effects.
Maybe, but I don't know. I'm very audio enjoying audio entertained. All right, so Chisomo, you were saying for our final segment.
For our final segment, I was just going to redirect it back through the mic, back to Stephanie.
No, I feel like that you have more of an idea of where we're trying to go than I do.
Yeah. So
right now
you would,
I'm sure you're going to ping about conversations that we've had, but like, I don't,
yeah, you would,
I feel super disorganized mentally right now.
Good.
I'm also hitting a medication cliff. And so focusing on things is not,
you are not presenting super disorganized at all. So just so you know, you're not presenting that.
I love it when you lie to me.
I love it when you don't listen. You don't believe me and you don't listen to my words. So
listen to your words. I just assume that they're Chisomified. Chisomified.
Everybody, I live alone.
Listen,
I live.
If you ever want to feel good about yourself, go talk to Chisomo.
So here's
Chisomo.
Let's just talk a little bit about the Chisomo Celebani philosophy. There are, in life, you have one, if we're talking about one situation, there are several different prongs in that situation. I'm really good at teasing out the different prongs. And so I will choose to look at the positive side of things and tell you the positive side of things. It doesn't mean that the negative pieces aren't there, but if you listen to my words, they will often be specific, or there'll be things that are eternal truths, like you are a person of value and your thoughts and feelings are valid in that you are beautiful. Like all of those things are true. And we just need to be reminded of those things. So those aren't lies.
So what you're saying is that I am a mess.
You're saying that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that.
No. What you're choosing not to say is that.
And then, you know, friends, you can choose to listen to me or not. So here's one. Bob, somebody started the fire. Okay, so back to the thing. So the thing that I've been talking about, you had mentioned that when you come back on the show, you wanted to talk a little bit about our experiences growing up in the scene together, a little bit, quote unquote, growing up. You had mentioned that because I am, and to describe stature, if you've never seen Stephanie and I, we don't look anything alike. Our baby faces kind of do. Like we actually compared like faces when we were children, and
Like, and she literally means our baby faces, not like how smooth our skin is
But like the way we looked when we were 4 years old, like we looked very similar in terms of facial features, but in terms
when
of structure,
everyone looks exactly just like.
That's and, not true. No.
And Bobby and Chisomo and Stephanie all looked very similar.
That's not true. So like, we all know about genetics, but seeing genetics in action is really, really weird. And I have seen pictures of Chisomo where I have gone, cousin, because she just literally looks like she shares a lot of characteristics with my family. And that's not because of our age. And that's not because like she's another Black woman. Like that's just a really
it's a weird thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a baby Stephanie a couple weeks ago, months ago, I was literally like,
what is time?
Yeah, I don't know. But I was like, this is why you've been saying this thing, because I took a double take and I was like, Stephanie, there's some structural things in our faces but that's like, you have to really look close. Otherwise, Stephanie and I are structurally not anything alike. I am short and like built like a fertility statue model something. And then
that is true.
Stephanie,
if you go to the Cleveland Art Museum, there's just some small little naked statues of Chisomo. And like, I think at one point I kindly let Chisomo know that I actually view her as a fertility goddess for this reason. Yeah, like if you look, they're like ancient fertility gods. I'm like, whoa, that's
true. So it's true. I'm like, it's like babow, babow. Like there's just a lot, there's stuff happening. So
yes, you be banging.
That is me. Short and
on top and on the bottom.
Yeah, short and having a lot of things
and
going
eternal.
On. and eternal. And Stephanie
okay, throughout history
looks like a twig.
Is statuesque and balletic and has like she has these beautiful long limbs. Like she can reach around me and grab things from high places. Yes, beautiful and statuesque. And so
I like that that's my value in our friendship. She can grab high things from me. Which, in your defense, I did that to Ken when Ken was over here. I was like, Ken, I need to borrow your tallness because this new kitchen.
As a tall person, it does feel good when someone's like, could you reach that for me? I'm like, I got a purpose. All right.
Yeah. Do and for some of us
I'm made for something.
Yes, for some of us that are close to the ground, it's very helpful. So I appreciate that. But structurally, we're nothing alike, and so we have, because of racism, gotten confused on a number of occasions. Which is,
but also let's just say it. I am who knows how many inches taller than Chisomo. Chisomo's like I think. On the shorter side of things, I think in the average height for males in the United States, which is like 5'8" or something like that, like our skin color is not the same. We normally don't wear our hair the same. Chisomo had her hair like mine once and it freaked me out because I literally just kept talking to her and I was like, cousin, because she had like my curls and the reds that were in there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like our style's not the same either. And yet, and I'm sure that every person of color in the scene listening to this, and when I say those words, I don't mean Black. I mean people of color in the scene have been confused for someone that looks exactly nothing like them, but probably shares a similar ethnicity.
Yeah.
And the scene is really aggressive about it. I met someone, I'm not going to say his name, I met someone at a friend's wedding and I was like, hi, it's nice to see you again. He was like, I don't know who you are. And I was like, okay. Well, now we're being rude because we have known each other for 10 years. There are 5 Black female Lindy Hoppers in Ohio at this time. And we have met 20 to 30 times. I was like, figure out my name, gave him a double tap, walked away. And he figured it out after that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if you can remember everyone else's name except for the 5 Black women, there's a problem.
Right. Exactly. And then We've also encountered issues where because we've taken lots of lessons together and we've worked together. And oftentimes, especially in Balboa, our challenges are a little bit different. Like, I am super grounded, close to the ground, you know, close to my ancestors. and Stephanie is more elevated. So a lot of our challenges in Balboa have been kind of opposite, but work together. And so we've been able to train together in ways that have really benefited both of us. But we also saw some really interesting phenomena happening as we were getting more and more into Balboa, where we saw, like, because I'm darker complected and like a little less like what you would see on the Balboa floor, more fertility goddess and less ballerina. There were some things that were happening with me, but then we also saw like hypervisibility and fetishization of Stephanie. So I know you.
You know what? And it's not just Balboa. I'm just going to say it's literally. So like the amount of places where Tissot and I have shown up together, both in swing dancing, but both in Lindy Hop and in Balboa, and like shown up in a community where no one knows us, but we decided to drop in at the local thing and to watch how ignored Chisoma was and to watch how sought after I was. And this is going off of very little information. I'm not talking about like people have seen us dance, because Chisoma, I feel like, and our dancing has always kind of been at the same level. Sometimes one of us is ahead or behind depending on what's going on. We have like scaled together, for lack of better words. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. There's also we've gone to national events where we have both been blatantly ignored, to the point where it's egregious, not like ignored, I'm going to say snubbed, where we would ask someone to dance and they would look at us and walk away, or someone would come to the sideline, look at us, literally talk around us to the person behind us and be like, would you like to dance? And it's quite clear that they were like, no, I'm not asking to dance, I'm asking them. And then at one of these events, I actually had a meltdown on a friend who is an international instructor. And I was like, I need to know that I'm not a trash dancer. I need one good dance right now, because this has been a hard night. And he danced with me. And I couldn't say no to people fast enough. But then, because he continued to watch Chisoma, and it's not just Chisoma, right? We have other friends in that room that this was also happening to, continue to watch her be dismissed and ignored.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
a horrible weekend.
It was a very notable, that weekend is emblazoned on both of our minds, because I feel like that was one of the most egregious experiences of being disregarded, because we met up on Friday at the event and we were trying to dance. And I remember we both were eager to dance. And here's the thing, is we can be kind of persnickety sometimes. And so we might prefer the hotel room over the dance floor at times. But this was a weekend where we were like, we want to dance. We want to be out here.
We hadn't been to a Lindy event in 3 or 4 years. And we're like, yeah, we're here. It's going to be a good time. This music is great. The dancers in this room seem great.
Yeah.
And no. And while it was a heightened version of, while this event was a heightened version, also what we went through was not.
It was
unique. It was for common. Us, yeah. Or for most other Black women that we know.
Yeah. I mean, I would actually challenge you. If you have a relationship with a Black woman, so don't just like randomly message somebody you don't know.
But that's awkward. Yeah. No.
I feel like I need to put that parameter there, because I've just seen people not use common sense in situations like this. But for audience members, I would issue the challenge. If you are hearing some of this and being like, is this really a thing? I would say, if there's a Black woman that you know who's a swing dancer, ask her. Ask her about being asked. And ask her, like, who asks her to dance, if she has to ask for dances, or how much dance time she gets. Because the thing is, like, every single Black woman that I've talked to, that Stephanie and I have talked to in the swing scene, all of us have examples of this. Every single one. It doesn't matter how shiny or amazing they are. Every single one of us has this experience. So it is super common. super, super cool.
You're also just making me think too, where we had a conversation a little while ago, and there is not a Black swing dancer that I know who has not been like, fuck this scene, fuck these dances. My sanity and my worth matter more to me than this dance does because of how you treat me. I literally do not know one single Black dancer that has not had that thought or has that thought on a frequent basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when we talk about like the revolving door idea, people are kind of always one foot out the door, or many people are, because of the experiences. And one of the great reasons about talking about social phenomena is that it helps us tease out experiences that we may not otherwise be able to explain. What I've been super grateful to have Stephanie in my life for many reasons, and within this conversation,
is it my singing?
Sorry, your singing is absolutely one of those pieces. But in this conversation, the being able to have somebody who is going through a common experience, and then like that weekend was such an interesting moment because it was like this interesting research study. Friday, we were both being ignored. We're both like had active posture, basically hunting leads down. Saturday, similar thing. Saturday, you dance with international instructor. I don't dance with international instructor. Things change. Sunday, your like behavior, like you still didn't ride the high of that experience. Like you kind of went back to what it was like on Saturday, but there was still like maybe a little bit more asking. But essentially, like we were able to see this process and eliminate some variables, right? Where it was like, okay, disregarded, ignored. Oh, somebody deems this valuable. Oh, okay, now is when people are going to pay attention to us. And so it's not great. I mean,
it hurts. It doesn't just hurt the people that's happening. Like to someone, I have been at events and I saw it happen to someone that we know, wonderful, wonderful follow. And I was like, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And I did what I do. I collect data and I'm slow to act often on things. And I watched event after event after event. And then I was in the hotel room, I'm going to be honest, screaming, not at Chisomo, but to Chisomo, screaming to Chisomo, because this person always has active. I'm ready to like, yes, please, someone ask me to dance. They are a wonderful, amazing, fun follow. And this scene goes, nope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was really interesting to see, you know, like, because when you're somebody who's being ignored, you have friends who are helpful, right? And so you might say something to a friend and they'll be like, hey, well, have you thought about this? And so they'll give you helpful tips. And one of those tips is to have active posture as a follow, to be out there moving a little bit. So you're kind of advertising that you're ready to go, right? And this person, every single song is out there jamming and has their solo jam moments, but then has moments where they're like, I would like to dance. And then seeing nights go by where people just like, yeah, no. So it was, yeah. Yeah.
I also think from a practical perspective, because I often, so when I think about any social activism, I also think that while listening and watching and learning is important, there's something that we can do on every stage of our journey. And one of the simple things that you can do, I feel like in almost any situation, is ask who's in the room or whose voice is being drowned out and figure out how to empower them. In this case, it might be saying hi to that person. It might be asking them to dance. It might be introducing them to a friend. And if you do that, I feel like in the spirit of love, that sounds really fuzzy, but I'm gonna go with that. If you do that in the spirit of love and kindness and community, I think it will be well received because you're not doing it at that point to tokenize them, right? You're not doing it to be like, you're a Black woman, I'm gonna dance with you. You are seeing someone who is being hurt and disregarded by this community, and you're like, you know what? I see you as a person. I'm gonna treat you like a person.
Yeah, I had a friend at an event reach out specifically. It was like the last dance. It was a late night. This happened last February 2020. I remember because it was like the last dance event I went to. And she was like, I really want to dance, but nobody's asking me. And at that point in time, I had a little bit of social power. Because that's the other thing, is like, it's important to recognize what power you do have, right? So as a dark-skinned, voluptuous Black woman, when I first walk into a space, I don't always have social power. But as a charming wunderkind, I that word came to me literally just because I'm talking to you. I don't ever use that word. But as me, sometimes I gain a little social power. And so in that moment I had some social power. So I was like, all right, I'm going to use this. I'm going to spend this. And so I went to a couple different people. I'm like, you want to dance? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I have somebody for you. And they were like, cool. And then okay. I did end up going back and dancing with them at some point. But like everybody that I asked was one, really great. And two, like also recognize what was happening because they didn't have the eyes to see this person being ignored. And so also kudos to that person. So I would say like, we don't need to save ourselves, but if you have the language to say what it is that you need and you have a person that you can trust, communicate that need. And then as people who are being entrusted with knowledge, then take action and follow through. So 100%, Stephanie, I love that. Like that nugget, like you're always able to do something in a situation. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong.
You are.
One. Oh, I might be. I might be very wrong.
What's up, Bobby?
So my brain just went. So at the next time that our listeners are at a dance, they can first off just keep an eye on the room throughout the night. And I'm pretty sure they'll be able to recognize what people might not be getting asked to dance a lot. And they'll start to also realize that those people tend to fall in certain categories so that they can easily, basically you can predict some of those things in the future. You can go say hi to them. How was your week? You can interact with them, treat them like human beings. You can ask them to dance. If you have a lot of social power in your scene, you can ask them to dance and dance very visibly with them. So that people are like, oh, that person that I know is having a great time dancing with that new person that I don't know. You can introduce them to other people. So those are at least three action items that can be taken immediately.
Wasn't that four? Can I just not count?
Four. That is four action items that can immediately be taken the next time that you go out to a social dance. And you will have probably met someone really cool and made the scene a better place.
Right.
And like, you don't always have to be on, right? Because I think that we have all had those times where like, I just want to go, I just want to dance and I want to hang out with my friends. And then I want to stare at a wall in a corner because I'm tired and I can't socialize. And that's okay. That's okay. It's trying to find those moments. I feel like when you have the ability to do it, And I think that it is something that honestly gets easier the more you just incorporate it in your mindset.
Yeah. And
mindset.
That's where you're going. So
the other thing is that, like, you know, a swing song is 3 minutes long usually. And if you go out for 2 hours of dancing, you're going to hear, I can't do my math right now, but 40 possible swing songs. Is that right? 400 possible. You're going to hear a lot of swing songs. And the act of like asking someone to dance is going to be 1/40th of your evening or whatever. So in that sense, yes, absolutely. You know, you don't have to be on all the time. You don't have to make this your like, you don't want this to feel like a job to you to go out dancing. But this one, it's a tiny little thing to do a few times a night. And overall, the cumulative effect is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cumulative effect is probably keeping someone in the scene.
Yeah. Or making someone feel safe, you know, like, and that's, yeah. That is really hard to
and
come
wanted.
By. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you don't realize that a small gesture could go a really long way. So, that sounds like a good spot, friends. Yeah.
I want to give a quick shout out on the air. Zen AF, we talk about ADD and medication, and I just want to give a quick shout out to Stephanie for talking through me with some things, and I ended up going and seeing a psychologist and getting on medication, and I feel it's a great process that's going very well, and I recommend if you are out there questioning that process, go and find someone that you can talk to and talk it out and maybe even give it a try, because you could always try it and then be like, actually, this isn't for me. So that's this little mental health bulletin out there. And I just, again, want to thank Stephanie.
Second mental health bulletin is if you find someone who doesn't believe you, find someone else. It's hard to advocate for yourself, but there are people out there who want to help you. And listen to your friends when they also have your back, because this wonderful woman here, I just started a new job that in some manners has me terrified, because I am fully aware that it's going to be hard when it comes to time management and meeting deadlines and not missing meetings and stuff, which I am very, very time blind. For those who don't know, I have severe clinical ADHD. I have medication that I try to take, but when you forget, it doesn't help. And Chisomo and I, over the who knows how many weeks of conversation, Chisomo was like, letting you walk around without ADA or disability accommodations is like me taking your glasses. If they help you do your job and you need them and you're entitled to them, why would you not? And so actually, for the first time in my career, I am working with HR to figure out what accommodations could look like so I can be successful. So I can do the thing that I'm being paid for and do it fucking well, because I am really, really good at my job, versus expending all this mental energy and anguish on trying to mask and seem that I'm neurotypical and walking around while I have there's help available.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked a bit about the idea of disabling impairment. And so I think all three of us wear glasses, right? Glasses are so common. Visual impairment is so common. But we just slap these on, and there are people who don't have visual impairment and they wear glasses. Like, that's how common they are. And so, but we don't think about all impairments in that way. We've somehow weighed and measured and stratified different impairments. And so, but like, not having a pair of glasses can be disabling. And so having different things going on within us can be disabling. But if there are the supports to help you do the things you need to do, why not have them, like a pair of glasses, right? So, and I think that's I first of all also really just appreciate the fact that Stephanie listens to me. We were joking about her not listening to me. She actually does hear me and listen to me often, basically every day. And so I appreciate you doing that, and then not just advocating for yourself, but then advocating for other people. Because when you take care of yourself, it enables you to better advocate for other people. And that is a lesson that I'm learning also through my health journey. So we are here to support each other and to remind each other of truths that we've forgotten, because I'm really good at saying stuff, but not really good at internalizing it and incorporating it for myself. But I have to run, friends.
That glasses thing, that's the thing. That is a beautiful way of putting it. 100%.
Yeah. Really makes us ask the question, why is it that visual impairment or even like orthodontics, why is it that certain things are okay and other things are not? You know? because we have decided that certain things that are naturally not okay with our bodies are fine. And we're like, oh yeah, you have that going on. Let's take care of that for you. And then other things we're like, no.
You get to suffer.
You should suffer. Don't talk so about it.
Like, we could help you, but we choose not to.
You should try to see more clearly.
Yeah.
Don't go for glasses. Don't use glasses as a crutch. No. No, no, no. No, you need to just like spend more time looking at landscapes so that your eyes will like readjust and get better.
Yeah.
Or you just need to
try. Bobby, don't even joke. Yeah. I was literally asked today, well, have you just tried, or this week, have you just tried harder? And I'm like, I don't think you realize how hard that I try.
Right?
Like, I was like, right? Okay. Yeah.
Right? Like the You've fact that I'm still making eye contact with you is already a lot of work.
Yeah. You've been trying hard every single day of your life. And like discounting that is... It's inhumane. It's not okay at all. Yeah. So, but I do love you all.
Yeah, you got to get out of here. This has been so lovely talking to all of you. This has been great. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate, you know, anything that you've been willing to talk about. We really appreciate it.
I have two thoughts and I'll be quick. I would actually love to talk about colorism at some point. I know that we talked, but I feel like, I'm sorry.
Episode 3.
So what I realized I wanted to do is I want to talk about colorism with a bunch of biracial kids and bitch about the swing scene and also being third culture.
That was already an idea that we had.
Yeah. Bobby was like, because by now we've talked to Laurel, you, Nico, there's enough right there to have an interesting conversation. I know I'm missing other people, but I do have to go. I love you. But tell Bobby your ideas. We'll make it happen. I think that that might be one of our next parties.
The other thing is what you guys know. I just wanted to say, and actually have it in the video, like in the episode. I am very, very grateful for both of you, because when we did our first episode, there was a lot going on and I was really struggling. And I do diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice work in my job, in most aspects of my life. And that day you met me with so much love and kindness, because there's so many people who would have asked me to push myself and to do mental harm to myself. There's a lot of days where we can talk about this and it's fine. But that day I was struggling. And I know that the plan was supposed to be to talk about issues of social activism and race inside of swing dancing. And I said, please no. If you ask as friends, I will say yes. But if you force me to go there, that I will be harming myself. And you show me so much love and grace by saying, then let's not. Where I know, and I've had many experiences where people have been like, well, no, I want this information and I want this experience from you now. So you're going to give it to me now. And because I care about them or I love them or because they are harming others, I will often, unfortunately, engage in harming myself to do that. And so I just wanted to say thank you both for being you.
Yeah. Thanks. A person shouldn't have to re-traumatize something.
Friends don't let other friends traumatize themselves.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. Like that. Friends don't traumatize their friends.
Intentionally.
Do, 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 do.